In the first part of our special feature with the horse whisperer Monty Roberts, we get to know a bit about the man himself. Monty, it's fantastic to see you here in Australia. What brought you down under?
Oh, curiosity, excitement, driven. I was first in Australia in, I think it was either 66 or 67. 1966 or 1967, I think. They were building the Opera House in Sydney when I was there. And Australia has been an interesting place for me, and one of the most malleable countries on the face of this earth that I have watched change dramatically just in my lifetime. And I think most people would agree that it's changed in their lifetime, even if they're half my age. So I came back with a lot of thoughts, a lot of ideas and goals. We'll see.
Goals. What would some of those be?
Learning more and causing horses to have a better life if I can. My life's goal is to leave the world a better place than I found it for horses. And for people too. And since I met Her Majesty in 1989, there has been an enormous effort by her to get me to keep going. And it's 43 countries now that she's had me in, exploring my concepts in violence-free training.
And that is essentially what you're about, the join-up method you're absolutely globally renowned for. Going back to a very young age, non-violent management of horses has been your number one passion.
Yes, I suppose you could say. But an early age for most people would be 12 or 13 or 14, something like that. And an early age for me was 4, 5, and 6, when I wasn't sure why there was so much violence going on in the world of training horses. I was told it had to be done. You don't like it, turn your head. And I did. I thought it has to be done. I really don't like it because I loved Ginger, my first horse. And I showed him first and in 1939. I have a trophy that I won in 1939 for first place in a class. But I never went to school, remember? I had a teacher on the road with me, and I was a professional horseman from birth, practically. So I was riding 8 or 9 hours a day because my father had a riding school. And in order to get all the parents to send their children to his riding school, his son had to win everything. So I did. Naturally, I won everything. These kids rode for an hour on Saturday afternoon, and I rode 8 to 9 hours a day. So it was a different life. And I had wonderful guidance from a few human beings that kept me from being violent. Because when you are imprinted to violence, it's true that you tend to be violent, and children are often about like their parents are. That's behaviors for you. And I have 2 doctorates in behavioral sciences that will tell me that. You're going to be like your father. And I wasn't. I changed it, beginning probably in about 1946, 47 in the Mustangs. Really changed me. There was an unnamed Mustang that they put in a dog food can, and he really changed me. He was the first horse to decide to come to me as opposed to going away. And that was 1946 or 47, and that's when I said, who is going to apologize to this species? Who's going to realize that all this that we're doing to them is not necessary and it's immoral?
You have a theory that horses speak a language. You call it equus?
Yes, except that John Grinder, the creator of neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, has been to my farm and he says, stop calling it a language. It's a communication system. Language refers to the lingua, the tongue. And there is no speaking language by a horse. But I'm watching you and there's a communication system. And it's a lot like signing for the deaf. It's a sign language. They have their signs. When we have signs and they, when you study behavioral sciences, you realize that more of our language comes from our bodies than it comes from our tongue. The words don't really mean that much. It's attitude and what you're talking about and are you excited about it? Are you negative? Are you positive? That's where communication really comes in. And the horses have it in the form of gestures. So it's a gesture language. And it's predictable, discernible, and effective. And World Book and Encyclopedia Britannica have been to my place and they were shocked to their shoes because when I was a child, all the encyclopedias said there was no communication system between horse and human. But there is. Mm. And I can tell them what the horse is going to do next by what he told me. And then he does it. Okay, nothing like seeing it to believe it.
And that has earned you the reference globally as the horse whisperer.
Well, yes. But Queen Victoria brought a man over from America to fix a stallion that she had. And someone asked Queen Victoria, what does he do with these horses? And she said, I don't know. I think he just takes them out behind the barn and whispers to them. Oh, so he's a horse whisperer. Well, that title came down through the ages. And then the man who wrote the book, The Horse Whisperer, decided that was the title that he wanted to put on it after coming to one of my demonstrations. And then he wanted me to assist him in writing that book. And Queen Elizabeth II, granddaughter of Queen Victoria, said, if there's any fiction in that book at all, I don't want you near it. I want a book from you that is dead on the truth. And I don't want you to deal with anybody that writes anything fictional. And she was so right. I stayed away from it. And I don't do the things that they wrote in that book. And I don't do the things that they put in the movie. Mm. They're completely against what I do. So she was right.
Hmm. And so you wrote your own book.
So I wrote my own book. And I was just down the street from Buckingham Palace visiting with publishers there. And they were sort of laughing at me. Ah, come on, you know, those books won't sell. All right? Horse books don't sell, and we do books that sell. And so I went back to Buckingham Palace and met with Her Majesty, and she went straight down to Methuen Publishings with me. And she said, I want a book. And then they took me in the boardroom, and she went back to Buckingham Palace, and they said, look, if the Queen wants a book, we'll print a book. But there won't be any residuals. And there will be no advance. You won't get any money for it. And I said, hey, I didn't even want to write a book. But if the Queen wants a book, and she has one for her nightstand, and I have one for mine, I'm happy. So if you want to print it, fine. Well, they went out of business before I published my book. And Random House stepped in and gave me something, I don't know, $300,000 or something advance. Because they said it is a book, and it will sell. Mm. And was she right? 6.5 million copies later, The Man Who Listens to Horses. And then they wanted to call it The Man Who Talks to Horses. And I said, I don't talk to horses. And I said, the better part of communication is listening. And that's how it got its name.
That book, The Man Who Listens to Horses, was the number one bestseller on the New York Times bestseller list for 58 weeks.
Can you imagine a cowboy from California? No other horseman has ever had a book even get on that list for a day. And to be on there for over a year, 58 weeks, I got a full page ad in the New York Times about my book being on there going over the year. And there's only, of the books published, there's only about 1% that stay on for over a year. Incredible. I don't know how I got so lucky.
Because a lot of the readers would be a non-horsey readership, which makes it even more extraordinary.
There just weren't that many horsemen around there. You're right. It had to be cross-spectrum, cross-discipline.
So you must feel very fulfilled that your message got carried to the world in such a way.
Fulfilled, I don't know about. I count myself as very lucky, but I'm not fulfilled. I haven't done a tenth of what I would like to do. And I will go in a box wanting to do more because it needs to be done. And my God, when you see some of the things that are done today with horses, this day, we're still scratching the surface. They've been domesticated for 6,000 years, and we're still acting like we have no idea what a flight animal is.
That was Monty Roberts, who I had the pleasure of catching up with during the Inglis Melbourne Premier Yearling Sales. Part two of our special feature interview with him next week, where we talk about many things, his life when it was endangered, and Pakistan Star, the horse in Hong Kong. He helped get back to winning form.